Hello, you're listening to the C to Z of Movies. My name's Colin. I am the C. Joining me is Zijan the Z. Hello, Zijan.
Hey, Colin. I'll see you tomorrow, actually.
As we record, that is true. This is very exciting. We're going to be off to see the Groundhog Day musical, which I hear good things about, although the Americans en masse ignored it, it seems.
Yeah, I pretty much did. Tim Minchin wrote the music, so I'm quite excited for it. Tim Minchin wrote the music for Matilda, the musical, as well. And I love Matilda, the musical. I know bits of the music for Groundhog Day, so it'll be fine. Although I don't really care for Groundhog Day, though, as you know, Colin.
Whereas I love the film Groundhog Day, so I'm excited to buy that. Looking forward to that, Zijan, looking forward to that. By the time our adoring public listens to this, that will have happened some time ago.
Yeah.
And it'll be old news. Maybe next time we can tell people what they should go and see Groundhog Day.
That's true.
But today we'll tell people if they should see The Flash, which is our main topic of the episode. We've also got a quiz on the films of Noah Baumbach, and we're talking about the Oscar-winning film Birdman and much more. We start, as we always do, with movie news. Zijan, what's going on in the world of movie news?
I mean, I feel like I should keep people updated that the WGA strike is still going on. Lots of delays, especially to the Marvel slate of films. So Deadpool 3 has been moved. Captain America, now named Brave New World, has been moved. Transformers 1, Thunderbolts, Fantastic Four, all the Avatar films have been shifted by a year, I believe. And lots of other films that I've not heard of that apparently are happening.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
Yeah, well, interestingly, Deadpool 3 is moving to be earlier than expected.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Everything else seems to move back. So I guess that means they've done it. We talked about this a bit last time, didn't we, where because Deadpool's got his mask, if they want to change the lines, they can do that later. So I guess they're hoping the strike gets sorted by then and they can just chuck it in and they'll be ready to go.
Yep.
Interestingly, so as you say, I think you mentioned the Avengers films, maybe you didn't, but the Avengers films, Kang Dynasty and Secret Wars, have both been pushed back a full year. Although they must have been pushed back already because they're in May now, and I'm sure they're going to be in November before. They're still going with Kang.
For now. I mean, Kang is multi-dimensional. He can just look at like anyone. So
yeah.
I mean, we're going to talk about someone who has a troubled personal life as well.
That's true.
That's true.
Yeah, it can be done. I'm trying to think when the next Kang. I guess Loki season 2 is coming out fairly soon, isn't it? And that's the next time we would expect to see Kang in significant amount. So
That's true.
We'll find out what's going on then.
I'm just very sad that the new Daredevil will be delayed as well. That's probably the saddest bit.
Oh, is that being delayed? All right.
Yeah.
That's a shame. Yeah. Yeah, the Star Wars movies, it's the first time in a while they've actually put some on a calendar because they keep talking about Star Wars movies. We don't know which ones these are, I don't think. They've talked about a lot of different directors a lot of different times.
Of course.
Who knows which ones, if any of these, of those, this lot is, but they're in for a couple in 2026, one in 2027. And you mentioned Captain America, Brave New World. It used to be New World Order.
Yep.
Is that just because of conspiracy theories?
What conspiracy theories are you talking about here?
So New World Order is, I think it's kind of anti-COVID vaccination people and various other mad people on the internet. You can claim that there's a big reset in global powers are trying to change us all. Anyway, they call that New World Order.
So. I did hear that, but I know that phrase has been thrown around by George Bush Sr.
He's dead, isn't he?
In the 90s.
All right.
That's why he used.
Maybe that's where it came from. Whereas Brave New World, as we all know, comes from Shakespeare.
And the book
by Aldous Huxley.
Yes.
You ever read Brave New World?
I have read Brave New World.
Me too. Aren't we educated folk?
It's okay.
Yeah, that was my general view as well.
Yeah.
I've also read The Tempest, which is where Brave New World comes from. Is that all we need to talk about, scheduling stuff?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, those are the most important things, though.
Yeah.
I mean, they did mention Spider-Man 4, which is not official yet, but the production has been delayed. Whatever that means.
I mean, they've not even got Tom Holland on board yet.
Well, he is taking a break, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. I haven't got that here, but he said he was going to take a year off because of the Apple series he did, or Apple film he did or something, was really grueling.
Well, yeah, that's just hearsay. But, to be able to afford to take a year off, what a luxury, man.
Yeah, and I think he's doing better than us financially.
Yeah.
Is he still dating Zendaya?
I think so.
Hmm.
That he's doing even better financially.
Yeah. I'm sure she's got some money from Dior or whatever it is she advertises. Or Dune 2. Guillermo del Toro has said he only wants to do animation from now on. I'll be honest, I didn't read the story, so I don't know whether this is a throwaway gag or a commitment never to do live action.
Nah, I think he just appeared in he was in the one of the awards for animations or something. But he said that he only had a couple more live action movies that he wants to do.
Oh yeah.
And after that, he just wants to do animation.
I've still not got around to seeing Pinocchio.
Well, I mean, it only won Best Animated Picture last year, so
yeah. All right.
Maybe you should.
Yeah, okay. If I choose just one Pinocchio film from last year to watch, I'll make sure it's that one.
I think that's probably the wisest choice.
I'm not really a fan of Guillermo del Toro.
He's a hit and miss for me as well.
Yeah. Although I've never seen Pan's Labyrinth, which people love. So.
Yeah, but I mean, just because he says he's only focusing on animation doesn't mean that he won't be doing things like TV shows anyway, because on Netflix he has this thing called Cabinet of Curiosities or something.
All right.
Guillermo del Toro. Yeah, so he's doing anthology horror shows on Netflix. So, I mean, that doesn't really count, does it? So, I don't think this will be the last we'll see of Guillermo del Toro doing anything live action by any means.
No, I think you're probably right.
Yeah. The Flash that we spoke about, the director Andy Muschietti, apparently, he may be directing The Brave and the Bold.
Yeah, the Batman and Robin, or the Bat Family movie that's coming up.
Yeah, the one that's based off, which follows Damian Wayne, Bruce Wayne's son, who he did not realize that he had a son, with Talia al Ghul. I only discovered him when he was like 8, 9 years old, I think.
That's a lot of backstory to bring in for a new Batman.
And a new Robin, yeah.
Talia al Ghul was Marion Cotillard in Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah. Which Batman is this anyway? It's not the Ben Affleck Batman.
Oh, right,
it?
No.
So it's not the...
No, it'll be a new cast, I think. And I don't. Yeah, it's not the Robert Pattinson.
It's not Robert Pattinson.
And it's definitely not Ben Affleck. And it's not Michael Keaton. It's unlikely to be Val Kilmer or the late Adam West. I think they're recasting Batman.
Again.
Maybe now is our chance.
No.
You used to have such optimism, Zijan.
I know, I used to, but then I realized I don't have the chin for it.
Yeah, mate, I'm pushing for the first bearded Batman. That's what we need. Dear. Yeah, I suspect that might depend on how well this one does at the box office. I think I might play into it. We shall see. Sarah Polley, who was known for Women Talking, a film that looked horrific to watch, but I'm sure he's very admirable, is taking a slight change of pace and is in talks to direct the live-action Bambi, which is apparently happening.
Live-action Bambi, Colin. Did you just say live-action Bambi?
I said live-action Bambi.
with the talking deer.
Yeah. Come on. I kind of get Jon Favreau doing this kind of thing because he loves a lot of stuff. And maybe Sarah probably loves CGI animals. But didn't they learn the lesson from Lion King that made $1 billion?
Exactly right. That's what they learned from it.
There's a hunter in Bambi, but do you see them? It's a long time since I saw Bambi.
He's off screen, basically.
Okay, so there's no human characters.
No.
I don't remember what happened in Bambi. Obviously, his mum gets shot and then he hangs around with a rabbit. Is that it?
Yeah, and a skunk.
Okay.
And then he grows up.
Oh, yeah.
And then he falls in love.
Does he?
Yeah.
Didn't know that.
That's it, really?
Well, good luck to him.
Here's the person who you like to see in movies because he's making weird choices right now.
Oh, yes.
Grant.
Yeah.
He's apparently starring in a horror movie now called Heretic.
Yeah, this is probably testing my Hugh Grant appreciation beyond breaking point. I'm not going to see Heretic.
Well, I mean, but it's written by the guys who did Quiet Place. Yeah, you saw Quiet Place, right?
I did, although only because it was a birthday thing for Fowdy. I wouldn't have gone to it otherwise.
Oh yeah, I was there. I forgot about that.
How could you forget?
Because I've seen it. That was my second time watching it. Remember?
Oh, it was
beforehand.
It?
Yeah.
My main recollection was that I'd ordered a nice ice cream sundae that had some crunchy honeycomb bits in it, and I was making a very loud crunching noise whilst we were supposed to be very quiet.
My other memory from that was that you used chopsticks for the first, well, approved by myself.
Yes.
Basically, for the first time.
One of my list of 40 things to do before 40 was learn how to use chopsticks, and yes, I've got a photo, taken by you, in fact, and you confirmed that I was using chopsticks.
Yeah, I mean, we can test it again tomorrow to see whether your skills are
still... That's true. I'm pretty rusty. It's a long time since I used chopsticks. Okay, well, good work, Hugh Grant.
Yeah.
Speaking of Hugh Grant, his last endeavor was Dungeons & Dragons from John Francis Daly and Jonathan Goldstein, and they are back with an action-adventure movie called Mayday, which will be starring Ryan Reynolds and Kenneth Branagh. I'm not sure we know much more about it than that, but they seem to be riding high in Hollywood, despite the fact that D&D didn't do very well at the box office, sadly, but was well thought of.
Yeah, I like D&D a lot, so I trust this directing duo anyway, so.
Yeah.
Hopefully it'll be good. Hopefully it won't become another Ryan Reynolds film, which I'm sure it will be.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? Is that Ryan Reynolds needs to do something where he's not just playing that same character again.
Yeah.
And, Kenneth Branagh, action-adventure. I'm assuming he's going to be either the villain or the boss who kind of sits in the M role rather than...
I mean, he is English after all.
Right? He is English.
There's only two choices when it comes to roles.
Yes. And has form of playing Russian as well. He doesn't mind putting on an accent, Kenneth Branagh.
He was Russian in Tenet, right?
Yes, I think so. I couldn't really hear anything in that movie, but I think so.
The new Transformers films is making lots and lots of money, as one is expecting. They beat Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
No, oh, come on.
From the top of the box office with a 61 million opening and an 80 million global opening.
Do better, people.
It's ridiculous. That's how much money they've been making. So much so that they're in talks. Stephen Capo Jr. is in talks to direct the next Transformers films. And spoiler alert, at the end of this Transformers film, which I have not seen, but I know what the spoiler is, at the end of the film, another toy appears from another toy franchise, and that is G.I. Joe.
Yep, everyone's favourite toy, G.I. Joe. They've made two films already.
And they all both did very badly.
And they're back. Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Because Transformers is very much an 80s toy. I don't think anyone's playing with Transformers now, or at least they wouldn't be if it wasn't for these films. G.I. Joe was I think, Action Man over here. I think that's the same thing. And basically outside of America, it had different names because no one knew what G.I.s were. And
yep.
Didn't really want to celebrate the American army. This doesn't feel like it's kind of bringing audiences. But maybe it is. I mean, what do I know? Transformers always make billions. I guess it's just Hasbro flexing their muscles, and what else do they own?
Yeah, so, why not, right? They are making money.
Battleship 2 will be on the horizon.
So long as people stop, keep watching the films, they'll keep making Transformers movies until the day we die.
There was one good Transformers movie.
That's why we're Hades Time
Field. The one Hades Time Field. It was Bumblebee. It was pretty good. In fairness, I've not seen this one, but come on. It was good to see Anthony Ramos getting a break because I thought he was fantastic in The Heights. So it was nice to see him headlining this.
I mean, I should watch it because Michelle Yeoh is in it. But...
Oh, yeah. Does she voice a Transformer?
Yeah, she does.
Yeah, that's really testing your Michelle Yeoh love quite hard there.
It really does.
I'm sure you can see like a clip package on YouTube or something.
Yeah, that's my plan, actually.
Hocus Pocus 3 is coming. You saw Hocus Pocus 2 and presumably yes. Hocus Pocus.
Yes.
Will you be watching Hocus Pocus 3?
If I've nothing on TV to watch.
Okay.
That's maybe.
Once you finish Netflix.
Yeah. I mean, It was okay, Hocus Pocus 2. It's just campy fun. Things you put on when you do your ironing kind of film.
All right.
Yeah. So maybe I will. Maybe if there's nothing to watch during Halloween.
Yeah, I mean, I've never seen the previous two Hocus Pocus movies, so I don't think I'll jump in at Hocus Pocus 3.
No. And my final bit of news is that Zack Snyder is planning an adults-only cut of his next Rebel Moon movies.
Oh, Zack. I think for fans of mine and people who are ready to take a deeper, harder dive, that'll be fun for them, he says. I'm not sure I want to take a deeper, harder dive into Zack Snyder's films.
I'm sure his fans will, though.
His fans definitely will. They'll be all over this. Has Rebel Moon come out yet?
No, I don't think so.
No, because I thought it had. But
it is at the end of the year, I think.
But then they were talking about it as if it hadn't, and it is now two movies rather than one.
Of course it is.
Yeah, it's the new Star Wars. For people who like big bangs and don't care about plot or character.
Yeah, incoherent storylines, that's the one.
The DC universe is only just trying to escape from the absolute garbage that he put on that screen, and we'll talk about that. The only other thing I've got here is that Bradley Cooper and Will Arnett are going to be co-starring in a film called Is This Thing On?, of which we know nothing other than I think it's a comedy, and presumably about stand-up comedy, because Is This Thing On? Is a kind of catchphrase. When if you tell a joke and it doesn't land, you're like, is this thing on? So who knows what's going to be, but that's a fun combo. So worth watching. It's got the C to Z guarantee, Zijan. And I've given it the C to Z guarantee based on the title and two
guarantee?
Letters.
What is this guarantee? I've not heard of this guarantee before.
It's our famous guarantee. If anyone sees Is This Thing On and does not like it, we will refund the price of their cinema ticket.
I'm not putting my name behind this guarantee.
Wow. Can't believe you sidestepped the C to Z guarantee, Zijan.
Yeah, you can call it a C guarantee. That's perfectly fine by me.
Okay. Well, I'll do that. Just C guarantee, if anyone remembers this. we move on then to C or Not to Z, the segment where we tell you about films we've recently seen and tell you, the listener, whether you should see them or not, Z them. Zijian, what have you been seeing or Zedding?
So, I saw this film called Mrs. Chatterjee versus Norway.
What on earth are you talking about?
Yeah, you've not heard of it before, right?
I was thinking like, Mrs. Strategy?
Chatterjee.
Yeah. Okay.
This is Norway. It's an Indian name.
Right, okay.
So it's an Indian Hindi language legal drama film. And it's inspired by a real life story of an Indian couple whose children were taken away by Norwegian authorities in 2011. So the background of the story is in that in Norway, the child care system is very strict. And if they see what they perceive as child abuse, they have, you know, the authority apparently to take the children away.
Oh yeah.
As part of a kind of humanitarian, you know, taking care of the child's welfare. And in this case, there's this Indian couple who migrated to Norway, and they were raising their kids based on Indian customs.
Okay.
So what happened was that two people from the child welfare services went to their house and basically kidnapped the kids away when the parents were upstairs dealing with something else, basically.
All right.
They just stole the kids and ran away with them. And when they were brought to court, as you can imagine, this has quite a bit of legal angle to it as well.
Hmm.
They were using things like, she was feeding her kids with her hand. You know, that's abuse.
Huh.
Yeah, things like that. Not using a spoon, for example. And then, yeah, so it was quite a big case in India, and so obviously it achieved quite a lot of notoriety, and hence it became a film, really. This film came out this year. So what I would say is that the story deserved better.
All right, okay.
When it comes to depiction in the film, I think the story is wonderful, wonderful story. I think it's gripping. I mean, just trying to sell that to you, I think by that plot alone is pretty good. But I think what happened is that they kind of Bollywood-fied it a bit.
Okay.
So it's a bit over-dramatic, if you know what I mean. Something that should be more personal, more intimate, more human interest story, it became more dramatic than it should be.
Yeah. How did you come across this?
A friend recommended it to me, really.
Okay.
So, and I was very interested in this because I've heard of this this kind of cases before, because there was a Malaysian couple who were in one of the Scandinavian countries and they spanked their child and the father was caught out and brought to jail.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so I was curious, you know, to see how what happened in this case, really. So, yeah, I mean, the story is excellent. It's really, really good. It's really gripping. It's just that it's...
Yeah.
Okay. Just over-dramatized, which is a shame.
Just looking from Wikipedia and reading the response from the Norway embassy in India.
Yeah, what did they say?
They said quite a lot there. Eating with their hands or having children sleeping in bed with their parents are not considered practices harmful to children and are not uncommon in Norway. There you go. Well, who knows. Nice. Crazy. My brother's a big fan of Indian cinema, so I don't know if he's come across this one. Oh, it's long.
Yeah, it's very long. You can recommend it to him, though, and see what he says.
Okay.
But you don't have to watch it yourself.
Well, he'll be listening, so you've done the job for me. I watched a film called A Life Less Ordinary, which is a Danny Boyle film from the 90s. I think it was the 90s, starring Ewan McGregor and Cameron Diaz. Ewan McGregor with the worst hair I've ever seen him have on film, by the way. The premise is that there are angels in a heavenly police station type scenario, where Gabriel is the chief of police, and they have to get couples to fall in love. And Ewan McGregor and Cameron Diaz are the couple they have to get to fall in love. Ewan McGregor is kidnapping Cameron Diaz, who is the daughter of his boss, who has just fired him. And he's sending ransom notes and stuff, and then they hit it off.
It's a Danny Boyle film as well.
Danny Boyle. I didn't actually realize it was Danny Boyle. The reason I had it is that I bought three films in a DVD set of three, and I'd watched the other two and I thought, oh, I'll give this a try. And it was only halfway through I looked up and realized it was Danny Boyle. It's quite early Danny Boyle, or relatively early. It may sound quite weird from that description, but in reality it's even weirder. I think it starts off quite nicely, and it's got some, I like the performances and the setup, and then there's just some really weird diversions, and it becomes quite unclear who's trying to do what. So Holly Hunter and someone else, I can't remember now, are the angels who are trying to get them together, and they've been sent down to Earth, and if they fail they're going to have to stay on Earth. But part of the way to get them together is to put them into peril, so they kind of become almost like Terminator type characters, hunting them down, and then at some point kidnap someone else, and yeah, it all gets a bit messy. And then right towards the end, spoilers for this, Cameron Diaz shoots Ewan McGregor through the heart, confident that it won't kill him because of a poem he told her.
What?
And it doesn't kill him, and there's light that shines through the wound, and that is never explained in any way. And it's just, I think the general review was pretty good, but terrible ending, and I think I'd probably agree with that. So if you want an interesting view into Danny Boyle's early career, not that early, I mean, it's post-Trainspotting, then as a curiosity it's quite interesting, but I don't think it's worth watching otherwise, really.
Wow, okay.
Good to know. We move on then to our main topic of the day, which is The Flash. Aha! See, Jean.
Which I was forced to watch, by the way.
Would you not watch this?
I mean...
Interesting. No. Okay.
Probably not. Especially after all the... everything that Ezra Miller has got himself in anyway, so yeah. But anyway, I'm here to give the synopsis of the film.
Please do. Oh, wait a minute. The story is by the same people who did the Dungeons & Dragons. Wow. I could not have told you that. Anyway, yeah. Please. Sorry.
It's directed by Andy Muschietti, which I mentioned early on. Ezra Miller returned as Barry Allen, The Flash. And in this film, Barry travels back in time to prevent his mother's death, which brings unintended consequences. And if you've seen the trailer, those consequences include meeting a double of himself, Michael Keaton returning as Batman, as well as a Supergirl, which is played by Sasha Kahl. I think that's how I pronounce her last name, but I may be wrong.
That's a good question. I would have said Kahler, but I don't know if that's true. Yes, it's basically a Flashpoint story for those who know the comics, albeit not very similar to Flashpoint at all. But it's a Flash going back in time and resetting things and upsetting timelines, etc., etc. Have you ever read the Flashpoint comic?
I've not read Flashpoint, no.
It's good, but very different. Shall we go through the cast then, as we often do?
Yeah.
As you say, Ezra Miller is a huge problem for this film. All sorts of awful things been accused of, or more than accused of, off screen.
I think it's very hard to overlook it as well.
Yep.
I find it very difficult. That I found it really, really difficult to root for someone who I know is being played by an actor who's doing all those things off screen.
Yes. And obviously very much front and center, not just there once, but there twice, playing two different versions of Barry Allen. And yes, as you say, very difficult to root for the character. Even things like, so he has a kind of a slight love interest story thing. I mean, it's very, very slight. And I do wonder, did they cut that back because they know that audiences aren't on his side? I don't know. But I think there's three big Ezra Miller problems here, actually. One is, and probably the biggest, is the off-screen stuff where, I mean, Ezra Miller's not at the premiere. He's not doing any interviews, understandably. The second problem is that the character of Barry Allen is quite annoying. I thought he worked well in Joss Whedon's Justice League, actually. I thought that was the right amount of Barry Allen, but when he's front and centre, that's tough. And the third problem is the other Barry Allen is even more annoying. Their solution to having a really annoying central character was to make another version that's even more annoying so that the central one seems less annoying by comparison.
Oh, the second Barry Allen was so bad. I hated his laugh so much.
Yeah, I mean, he even at one point says, I know I'm pretty obnoxious. And he's like, well, maybe write a different character then.
Yeah, like, Barry Allen isn't like this, though. Like, I think we get spoiled because Grant Gustin played a very good Barry Allen on the Flash TV series in the CW.
Yeah.
You know? And we have that. We have that kind of Barry Allen out there. And now we get this kind of Barry Allen. And
I think the problem is, like, as a kind of a fairly nervous, wisecracking guy in an ensemble, it works okay for me. I know not everyone loved him by any means in Justice League, but I think it works as one of five or six if you're undercutting the seriousness of Batman, say.
Yeah.
But if you are the lead, and then, because to try and make him more serious, they put in another version, and oh dear. So, not a fan of his portrayal, as you say, couldn't really root for him as a love interest, couldn't really root for him as a trying to solve his timeline issues.
No, it was tough. It was a tough watch for me to see Barry Allen there. It's just tough.
Okay, Michael Keaton, back as Batman.
I personally wish they kept his involvement secret. I think they announced it only because of Ezra Miller's problems. So they needed something to pull people to come watch the film. And that's why they brought him back anyway. I think they filmed it such that it was going to be a surprise for everyone because he first appeared in the film with a gigantic beard and his head, his head in shadows and all that jazz. Like, if you've seen the trailers, you know that's Michael Keaton. So there's no reason why you need to hide it.
Got long hair.
Why do you do that?
Obvious fake beard. It seems. I certainly think they lent on him very hard because of the Ezra Miller situation. I'm not sure they would have kept it secret. I don't know. It's an interesting question. I would have preferred not to know going in. Yeah.
Me too. I definitely would.
Where are you on the Michael Keaton Batman films? Is that something you watched as a kid, or is that?
I've watched them as a kid. Yeah, but I don't think I was old enough to appreciate. Anything more than a superhero, really, when I watched it.
Yeah, because I didn't see them until I was in my 20s, I think.
So we've got different takes of it.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I never, and this is controversial, but I never thought he was a very good Batman. I didn't think he was a very good Bruce Wayne, maybe more to the point. I thought Val Kilmer was better.
What a take.
Yeah, I very much don't like Batman Returns. I think listeners will know if they've heard me talk about it before.
Why don't you like seeing penguins carrying missiles on your backs?
I mean, the penguins I didn't mind. I think it was the wildly misogynistic take on Catwoman.
Oh, yeah, that one.
That really bothered me. so I don't like... I like the Batman film, the first one, but I don't have a deep affection for it by any means. And of all the Batmen we've had, might be my least favourite apart from George Clooney. So it's nice to see him again, even having said that. But it wasn't a kind of, wow, it's that guy I love.
I mean, and we won't have a wow anyway, because we saw him in the trailers.
Yeah.
So it's not like we don't know that he's showing up and playing quite a big part in the role, yeah, in the film anyway. So.
But I imagine for a lot of people, even if it wasn't a surprise, it was still a great joy to see the Batmobile they remember and to see the costume they remember and to see the... Joker bag they remember, which I did not remember.
No, I like the music though. I definitely like the music when he played the Batman theme when he appeared, and every time when the Batmobile flies, I love the Batman music. It's just so nostalgic, so 90s. So
actually, it was 1989, to be very pedantic. But fair enough. So, yeah, I think it's one of the things, like, if let's say they were bringing back, I'm trying to think of a film of a similar era that I love, Back to the Future. If I like doing that again, I would be like, wow, it's that thing. Wow, it's that thing. I love that stuff. Whereas, yeah, not so much for this. So Sasha Kala or Kal, Supergirl, Kara Zor-El.
I like this portrayal.
Yeah.
I think it worked.
Yeah. What do you like about it?
I think I like her story. I mean, she's basically been tortured and all that jazz, right? So. In a unknown facility, but we know it's in Russia.
Yes.
It's based in Russia. But yeah, I mean, like, she, like, at first I was like nervous with all this, especially with all Henry Cavill leaving the whole DC extended universe and him and all that stuff. I think she portrays a very good supergirl, really. Like, she carries herself well, if that makes sense. She has this kind of magnetic. Yeah, I know. I'm just drawn to her. I think she works very well on screen.
Yeah, I took a while to warm up, but I do agree. I think she was my favorite of the cast. At first, I wasn't sure what she was going for, but no, you're right. I think, yeah, she's a stoic, like a Superman.
Like a Superman, right? Yeah. Like as you expect.
I think much. I mean, the only other Supergirl I've seen, I did see Supergirl the movie many, many, many years ago. But the only other Supergirl I'm really familiar with is Melissa Benoist, and she doesn't play it like that at all. Which is, I guess, how that's written. But yeah, so it took a while to kind of get what they were doing. But yeah, I did like it. I also thought it was slightly weird that she was in full makeup in the Russian. cage thing for how many years?
I mean, everyone looks like that, Colin, when they wake up from bed. Have you seen any film?
I also thought it was a weird choice on behalf of the movie makers to give her the exact same haircut as the second version of Barry Allen. That was odd. But you know, I did like her. I thought she was great.
Me too.
Maybe we'll see her again. We shall see. Interesting that it wasn't Henry Cavill. Because in Flashpoint, they have a very similar thing, but it is Superman. So Superman has landed in, I think it is Russia, but I could be wrong. And he's been held in one of these container-type things away from the sun forever. And then he comes out and powers up. So she has taken over the Superman storyline from Flashpoint.
I wonder why they didn't choose Henry Cavill, though.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, why they treated Henry Cavill so badly consistently for 10 years is a good
it's a mystery, right? Yeah.
And I mean, slight spoilers for this, but his send off in this, good lord, he did film some scenes for it or a cameo for it, which they didn't use, and what we get instead is a kind of a weird plasticky looking version of him at one point. What are they doing?
DC, good old DC.
Michael Shannon is back and phoning it in.
I mean, he's just there for the paycheck, right?
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, if your face is mostly covered by a plastic mask, I guess.
I did wonder, was he ever on set?
Who knows?
Or was he?
I mean, did they just reuse scenes from
I don't know. Because of the weird mask thing, did he just film it on a blue screen somewhere and then just put it over an actor? I don't know. I don't know. Ron Livingston is here instead of whoever it was last time.
Billy Crudup.
I'm assuming there was a clash. I mean, Ron Livingston's always solid, isn't he? So, yeah. Good work.
I mean, he plays Barry Allen's father, the one who has been... And for those who do not know the Flash storyline, what happens is that Barry Allen's mom dies, and then his father is convicted of killing the mom, and he is sent to prison. So, in the TV series as well, you'll see that Barry is just trying to get his father out of prison, really.
Yeah, and this is the basis of the Flashpoint comic of him trying to go back and save his mum. So that's what happens here. His mum, played by Maribel Verdú. I don't think Noor Allen is traditionally Latina, but she is in this film. Very warm. Nice portrayal, I thought.
I think so, too. I think everything to do with Barry and his family kind of works.
I think it does work. Apart from Barry.
I know what you mean. Like, can you imagine having a son like Barry when you have parents like Ron Livingston and Maribel Verdú? Like, come on, man. Like, oh, I feel so sad. I think the parts which were supposed to be touching and heartwarming, I think they actually worked well. The family bits, I think it did work.
With a different lead actor, it would have been very moving.
Yes, I would say so.
I've touched on the love interest. Kiersey Clemons reprises her role as Iris West, as she played in Zack Snyder's Justice League. She was cut from the theatrical release of Justice League. I thought she would do a lot more in this film. I guess because it is Flashpoint, she couldn't in the past, but she's barely in it.
She hardly had anything to do in this. I mean, I'm surprised they give her credit as well.
Yeah, so she's credited as well, not credited, but she's described as a love interest, but there's barely anything there. There is a scene where he saves her, in the Snyder version.
There's no reason why she would want to go on a date with him either. I don't see why.
No, it's not clear, is it?
No.
I guess
that's apart from the fact that they go get together in the canon, but there's no reason why she would get together with him in this film whatsoever.
No, because the character is a huge part of the TV series, but yeah, nothing much here. I think we might have seen the last of Kiersey Clemons, I'm afraid.
Yep.
And she's a journalist because it's DC Comics.
Yes, yeah. Everyone's a journalist. All the love interests are journalists.
Yep, like love interests like Superman. Lois Lane, even Supergirl is a journalist sometimes, isn't she?
Yep.
That'll do for cast, won't it? There's a few cameos and things, but we'll maybe come to those in spoilers. Well, actually, I think everyone knew that Ben Affleck was in it, didn't they?
Yes, there was in the trailer. So he was there. He was. I mean, he tried his best. He's not like as bad as Michael Shannon.
No,
I would say.
It's weird. I've seen interviews with Ben Affleck where he's saying this is the first time he felt like he really got how to portray Bruce Wayne Batman, and he felt he really nailed it. And watching it, I didn't necessarily think that was true.
I did quite like the action scenes that he was in, though.
Yeah, the action scenes were great. Yeah,
I was thinking, whoa, I wish I saw this kind of Batman in all the other Batman versus Superman kind of things. You know, everything is clear, bright daylight, rather than anything gloomy that Zack Snyder puts him in. But yeah, it's...
And this is a minor spoiler, but it was out there already, but Gal Gadot reprises her role as Wonder Woman in a not great scene. I increasingly think that Gal Gadot is not as good in this role as originally thought. So I think she was fantastic in the first Wonder Woman.
But that's it.
With every later performance, I mean, she's not had a huge number, but it was a fairly awkward cameo in Shazam 2.
That is the worst cameo, though.
Yeah, in fact, she wasn't on set for that. So.
I mean, she literally resurrected a young little boy.
Yes.
She has powers of resurrection.
She does. But only for people with that weird spell on them or something.
Right.
Anyway, in Joss Whedon's version, there was a kind of a spark of potential love just between Batman and Wonder Woman that I thought worked quite well. In this, they're very much... doesn't seem to be. I don't know. Anyway, she's there for 5 seconds and then heads off.
Yeah.
The tone of this movie, I think, was a little bit mixed up because sometimes it was going very heavily comic. Sometimes it was going quite serious. I think it settled into something in the end. But at first, the opening scene where we see Barry Allen in the Justice League and he's communicating with Alfred, and I guess this is kind of spoilers, but not really, has to go and save a bunch of babies that have fallen out of a hospital. Mm-hmm. And it's played for laughs. But I think, isn't this a tragedy, potentially? I felt like, I mean, it's a great joke. It's a great baby shower joke, in fairness. But
that's about it, right?
Yeah.
Like, even the way he behaves around his co-workers, everything was played for comedic effect.
Sometimes successfully, but not often.
All the time, yeah.
And I mean, Barry Allen is the kind of always a wisecracking, jokey guy in the comics.
It's basically the Spider-Man,
yeah,
of DC, really. The lighthearted guy, yes.
Yeah. And I did like some of the action scenes. As you say, the Batman action scene I thought worked really nicely. But yeah, tonally didn't seem to be fully coherent.
Well, he doesn't know why it wants to be, I think. I think it struggles with trying to balance between... I mean, that's the thing, right? You need to strike a balance between his comedic side and the seriousness of whatever he's dealing with at that point in time. I think Spider-Man tends to do that quite well.
Yeah.
But I don't think it works very well in this film.
I also think really quick characters, like The Flash, we're still suffering slightly from the fact that this was done perfectly in Days of Future Past with Quicksilver. And everyone since then is trying to do a speedster saving people scene
in slow-mo
has got to try and work out how to do it differently to that, and I don't think anyone's really nailed it, because that was wonderful. That was just really funny, really clever. Whereas this, I mean, he's putting a bunch of babies on a trolley, and there's some I think it was quite a nice touch that he needs to eat enough calories to keep going, so you throw some of that in. I thought that was pretty good. But
I think what's quite good as well is that he addresses the problem with super speed power as well. Like, you can't just grab someone and run away with them. They'll just break in their arms, basically, if you're going at super speed and someone else isn't, because of inertia. So I think they did well addressing it. But I agree with you that the slow motion scene is tired and overused already.
Yeah.
And
but what else do you do with The Flash?
That's the problem, yeah. Right? That's the problem with speedy characters. It's difficult because either you don't see them doing anything because they're too fast, which they should be, as they should be, because they're too fast for the eye to capture. But then you can't make a movie out of it, can you?
Yeah, I mean, because if you can move fast enough to travel back in time, then you can move fast enough to do anything. Yeah.
Can we talk about how bad the CGI is in this film?
Go for it.
The babies are horrendous. They look awful. They really look awful. The babies, this is the first scene of the movie. The first scene where you see him using his powers and all that. The babies in there look like dolls. At best. Like, this was some shoddy CGI that's going on here. And not only just that, you know, the scenes where he travels back in time and he sees different versions of all the other characters. Can't they pay their CGI artists more money to do something with that? Like, they were so bad.
So this is the one where we see the weird plastic Superman and various other pieces. Yeah, that was... I mean, I thought that was fairly deliberately stylized. Maybe I'm being generous. But overall, I didn't have massive problem with CGI, but there were some... Yeah, the babies are horrendous. The bit where he kind of sticks his head out when he's testing time travel is so bad. Because it reminded me a bit of that one that's got a lot of criticism online in Thor, where you see a kid's face hovering in midair. But when you compare it to that weird scene in Batman v Superman where the Flash is sticking his head through Bruce Wayne and shouting, "It's all about Lois," that was a mad scene that was never really explained. But at least it looked okay. Whereas this is just... I feel like a composite just as well as that, and I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it's because of reshoots or what it was, but
just looks really bad. I think there are some bits which are definitely reshoots, and I'm pretty sure Ezra Miller is not in them as well.
Mm.
I'm pretty sure the end scenes, like, that's definitely not Ezra Miller at all. I'm pretty sure they CGI'd him in.
I mean, I'm sure they would have had to. Yeah. I mean, he was on the run at some point, wasn't he? So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Should we talk a bit about Michael Keaton as Bruce Wayne in terms of... He's still in a kind of a Batcave that's similar, like, or and a mansion in the Batcave that's similar to the Burton verse, but not quite the same.
Oh.
Got a nice waterfall outside, which is more of a Christopher Nolan thing. This kind of trope of one-time heroes living as kind of hermits, it's kind of like Luke Skywalker in Force Awakens, but you see it quite a lot. I thought people hated it in when it was Luke Skywalker. I don't know if how people responded to this.
I couldn't care less for it, to be honest.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was an issue until you brought it up.
yeah, fair enough. I mean, it's a slightly weird one that he kind of is. It's like he's never left the house in 40 years, but he's immediately.
I mean, he lost his butler, so I mean, he doesn't know how to do basic normal human stuff.
I think his butler had died before the fourth film, maybe. Although he had a computerized butler in that one, if I remember rightly. Maybe not. Anyway. Will that do for non-spoilers?
I think that works for non-spoilers. Overall thoughts, basically.
So weirdly, this is one of the films I was looking forward to most this year. Partly to see how on earth they managed to do it, but also because I'd heard good things. James Gunn has been going on how fantastic it is. The early reports were great. I thought it was a fun concept. I liked the comic. I was interested to see how they landed it. I also heard there were going to be loads of cameos, and I was looking forward to just enjoying that without worrying too much about the intricacies of the story. Overall, I'd say it was fine. If it had got a different lead actor, it might even have been very good. Oh. But the lead actor, the situation off screen, but also the portrayal on screen, kind of ruined it.
Yeah. I'm in the same boat as you. So I came into it with a lot more trepidation than you were.
Yeah.
And I didn't end up hating it more at all, really, as I thought I would. I think primarily because the story is actually coherent. I feel like DC struggles a lot when it comes to story and plotting because it thinks it's bigger than it actually has to be. Mm. But this one actually does make sense. And this one, like, it does tie up really well. Like, and if there was a better Barry Allen in it, it actually would be a very decent standalone Flash movie that I would be willing to root for because it's a pretty good story. I can understand where it's coming from. The whole Flashpoint thing about him trying to rescue his mom, I think, you know, it's, we all know where it's going to lead, where it's going to end up when, but it ends up where you expect it to. But and I think it's a good story. A good story saves this film from being atrocious.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, the story, I think you're maybe being a bit more generous than I would be in that I think it ends a bit abruptly. But other than that, yes. Yes, I think it is at the root, him trying to save his mother and his father, who was on trial for the murder of his wife, is a good way of doing this. So on to spoilers. Spoilers. You know me and how I like my time travel movies to make sense.
Yes.
Goodness me, this didn't make any sense.
I mean, did you get a reference to Back to the Future?
I love the references to Back to the Future. So they do. They when he goes back into this alternate past, and people are referencing Eric Stoltz being Marty McFly in Back to the Future, I did enjoy that. For those who don't know, Eric Stoltz was originally cast as Marty McFly and then was replaced by Michael J. Fox.
Yes.
Which apparently this had a kind of a knock-on effect of, who was it, Michael J. Fox was in Footloose and Kevin Bacon was in Top Gun and so on and so forth.
That was quite fun.
But they hang a lantern on it where Barry Allen says to Bruce Wayne, like, how come your Batman, how come like what I did in the past changed things that happened before that? And there's this nonsense about spaghetti and
intersecting events.
But it's garbage. Like you can't just change one thing and that means that the entire, like, the past changes. I don't care what you say, Bruce Wayne. No. Did that not bother you?
Not as much as I did by Interstellar.
Yeah, that bothered me a lot in the time.
That bothered me a lot more. But this one, I mean, I can take it with a grain of salt only because it's a comic book film.
But it feels to me like they wanted Michael Keaton. They got halfway through writing it, and then someone's like, how on earth is Michael Keaton here? And they're like, oh, I don't know. Let's try and make something up that that gets us out of this. I know, I suspend your disbelief and all this, but... And in fairness, the Flashpoint comics, so I think, probably does do a similar thing, because like when it turns out that the Amazons and the...
Atlanteans, yeah,
are at war, and that's difficult to explain based on Nora Allen being alive. So yep. Yeah, maybe there's precedent for this. I really thought that the other Barry Allen was going to be the Reverse Flash.
It kind of did, right?
Kind of did.
I mean, so what happened was in the film, when the OG Barry Allen was racing back to the future. He was knocked out from the time zone, timey-wimey. The Speed Force by this unknown guy.
Surely you remember, Zijan, the greatest cheer moment in cinema history when Barry Allen entered the Speed Force.
No. he got hit by this unknown guy who turns out to be the new Barry Allen stuck in the time loop trying to fix stuff.
Which I thought that was a really good twist, actually. I saw it coming slightly before they revealed it, but only slightly before.
Yeah, me too.
So it was a nice idea. I did like that. And it's got, yeah, because I was expecting... So Reverse Flash is one of Flash's main villains, and he's just a bad guy who wears yellow. And the second Barry Allen was seen wearing yellow, and I thought that might be what they're doing. You're right, it is kind of like that, but without the, I guess, villainous intent.
He's
trying to save this alternate world, because they, I mean, long story short, Zod comes back. Batman and Supergirl and the two Flashes are fighting Zod, and every time they do, Batman and Supergirl get killed. And as you say, New Flash is going back to try and stop it happening, and he's just in this massive time loop.
Yep.
I did think it was a bit weird that Barry Allen got knocked out of time by this guy and then never thought about it again. At no point was like, I wonder why I got knocked out of time by that guy.
I mean, he had other pressing issues, right? Like eating spaghetti.
He did love the spaghetti. He wants to get Barry Allen version 2 to get his powers, so he takes him back to the lab and makes it happen all over again. But that somehow means he loses his powers. So he's depowered for a while, which I guess is what you have to do with absurdly powerful people in this kind of film. Then he gets the powers back again just by being struck by lightning.
Yep. I wouldn't encourage people to try this at home.
What I love, actually, is so they rescue Supergirl. She quickly gains her power because she's exposed to the sun. She immediately flies off. She comes back and sees they're electrocuting this guy. She doesn't know why they're doing that. They've never discussed his powers or how he got them with her present. She immediately just picks him up to get struck by lightning in the sky. It's like, what are you doing, Supergirl? What?
I'll do you one better. Okay. Like, she flew off, and Zod saw her and let her fly back to bring Barry Allen to get struck by lightning.
Yeah. The whole thing about, I know, so we revisit the events of Man of Steel where Zod is in the sky and does nothing for a long time.
Yeah. Yep.
I did like the way they tried to retcon it this one. It was like, Zod killed thousands of people. Like we saw Superman kill people as well. We were all watching that movie. Here's one thing I was definitely not expecting.
Go on.
We talked about it, but is the death of Supergirl. As we've discussed, we both like what she did, and I was definitely not expecting them to kill her off in her
multiple times,
and definitively in her first appearance.
Yes.
I mean, were you expecting to see her again later down? We've got a Supergirl movie coming.
I think she works well as Supergirl, to be fair. And she's our favourite in this cast anyway, so I'm hoping she'll come back again.
I don't think they will. I think James Gunn is doing more or less clean slate.
Yeah.
Maybe. Maybe she will. But it'd be a shame if that was her only... Because she did, I think she was great, but she didn't say a lot, did she? They didn't give her a lot to do.
I mean, she's been stuck in the Russian prison for God knows how long, right? So
and had a great, can't blame had her. A great fighting where she just rent through all the Russian soldiers. Hey, were you excited by the return of Thomas Curry?
Nope. I forgot who played him.
Temuera Morrison. Best known as Boba Fett. Oh no, sorry, Jango Fett in Star Wars. But Temuera Morrison played Aquaman's dad, and he is back. Didn't mention that Jeremy Irons is back as well. There you go.
As Alfred.
Did you enjoy the performances of Saoirse Monica Jackson, Rudy Mancuso, was Patti Spirit, and Albert Desmond?
They added nothing to the film.
No. I did like the fact that he then saw them again in the past, and it's like, what is that, Patty? And it's like, the entire audience is kind of straying, thinking, is that girl we saw before?
Yeah, no one cares. I don't care why. Yeah. Why you put them in? It's unnecessary. So unnecessary.
I didn't know that Sanjeev Bhaskar could do a decent American accent, but there he was playing Barry's boss. Anyway, so I'd heard that this was Cameo Central, no pun intended. Central City, no. Anyway,
yeah, I got that. You got it?
Yeah, fine. I think if you're gonna do cameos, do loads of them. Don't do like five. Either don't bother or just throw everything at the wall. We got in order.
Yes.
And it's not in order. It's in the order I've written down.
Yes.
We got George Reeves, who was one of the first Supermen, played by Ben Affleck in the film Hollywoodland, actually. We got Christopher Reeve and Helen Slater, Superman and Supergirl. We got Adam West, who I must admit I had to look up afterwards because I did not recognise him from the brief glimpse we got of him as Batman. And we got Nicolas Cage as a long-haired Superman fighting a giant spider.
Yep, all these are very bad CGI, by the way.
He was kind of de-aged, wasn't he?
Yes.
Now, the Nicolas Cage thing is weird, because if you are a film buff, or at least a kind of a DC Comics film buff, you will know that, and maybe you don't have to be that much of a buff, because I think this is fairly common knowledge, but you will know that Nicolas Cage was lined up to play Superman in Tim Burton's film, and the producer said that he had to fight a giant spider in that film. But what percentage of the audience do you think knows that? Like 20%?
I didn't know about a giant spider. Or I forgot about it. I didn't know about Nicolas Cage.
Because if you didn't know that, you're like, what on earth is Nicolas Cage doing here? And what's going on? I mean, it was fun for those who know. And for those who don't, baffling.
I'm surprised they didn't take like Brendan Routh or Tom Welling from the Smallville. Superman.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
I mean, those are actual actors, you know, who played Superman.
And I thought it was fun to see Christopher Reeve, and I was not expecting Helen Slater. That was quite a nice touch to see another Supergirl. But that's what I'm saying. Like, you've got a lot of DC films over the years. I mean, maybe you can't persuade Christian Bale to come in for this, but I would have thought you might see more than just a handful. And if you're going to do a handful, why is it that handful? But the weirdest one, did you see Jay Garrick?
I saw Jay Garrick. Who was it?
It was Teddy Sears, who played in season 2 of the Flash TV series, a character who claimed he was Jay Garrick, but then later turned out to be Zoom, the villain of that series.
Are you serious?
Now, I've seen that series. I loved Flash at that point. I had completely forgotten that. I had to look it up. This just tells me that Grant Gustin turned this down, because surely Teddy Sears was not the first person you... John Wesley Shipp, who played him in the kind of the cult TV series of the 90s, I think, or 80s. You get him before you get Teddy Sears, don't you?
You think so.
So that was baffling. I mean, the Jay Garrick thing was a nice nod, but why on earth do you get him to play that? I don't... Did you watch season 2 of The Flash?
I have watched season 2 of The Flash.
But see, I loved it, but I'd forgotten entirely all of that.
More cameos.
Go for it.
We have, at the end, we have George Clooney.
Now, that was fun.
That was fun, I agree.
Sadly, I already had heard that was happening.
I didn't.
Yeah, I didn't tell you because don't want to ruin it. But yes, for those who don't remember, George Clooney was Batman in Batman and Robin.
With the bad credit card.
Yes, the worst one. And when Barry Allen returns to the present day, having solved all his problems, more or less, turns out that Batman is not Ben Affleck, it's George Clooney, which was a lot of fun. It does make me think that when they filmed this, it was before James Gunn came in, were they really setting George Clooney up to be the new Batman?
I don't think so, right?
Surely not.
No. So yeah, I think it's just a fun nod to the audience, really.
I get it as a fun nod in this world that we know it's being replaced by James Gunn's world. So maybe it was a very late shot that they thought, well, I might as well. But if you think this is the ongoing DC universe, surely you don't do that. Weird. But yeah, it's fun to see him. Nice ending. The I do wonder if they were on the same screen together.
I'm pretty sure it's a different Flash there. I don't think there was Ezra Miller in that scene at all.
And the dialogue is something like, hi Barry, hi Bruce, you're not a Batman. What are you talking about? Why doesn't he... I don't even know if he is Batman or not.
He was out in public, right? It's not like he was going to admit that he's Batman in public.
Yeah. I was kind of starting to say, like, keep your mouth closed or keep your voice down or something like that. But what are you talking about is a weird thing to say. Do you think we'll see any of this stuff again?
Nope.
No, I don't think so. I think this is doing okay at the box office, isn't it? And they have said as recently as this month that if it does well, there's a chance. But, I mean, they're not going to bring Ezra Miller back.
No.
No one's crying out for that.
They've threatened to bring him back, but there's no way.
No, I think it would be very strange if they decide to hold on to this. Did you stick around for post-credits?
No, but I know what it's about. Jason Momoa is back.
He is. Barry Allen is explaining everything, and he's the same guy. Yeah, I mean, it was quite fun, but it was literally just there to remind us that Jason Momoa is here, so we'll all go and watch Aquaman 2 whenever that comes out.
That's it.
Yeah. Well done, DC. You did it again.
It's not one of their worst outings, to be honest, which is a shame.
No, actually, you're right. In terms of DCEU content,
yes,
this is probably
one of the better ones.
Well, I mean, it's definitely worse than the Suicide Squad and Wonder Woman. It's definitely better than Birds of Prey, Batman v Superman. I'd put it middle.
Justice League as well. Yeah.
Aquaman's probably better. Shazam's probably better, and Shazam 2 is probably worse. Yeah, somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
But maybe a little bit of a halfway. But as we keep saying, different lead actor, this could have been a really good one. So.
Yes.
It's a shame. We move on to our segment Look Back in Oscar, where we're talking about the film Birdman, brackets, or The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance. Sijan.
Guess who's back?
It's Michael Keaton.
Oh my goodness.
Wow, it's like we planned this stuff.
Playing an aging superhero. No, not playing an aging superhero. Playing an actor who played an aging superhero. No, that's wrong. Aging actor who was a superhero.
There we go. Yep.
I saw this on Disney Plus. It's all on Disney Plus right now.
Is it? I saw it on DVD.
So it's a 2014 film directed by Alejandro Iñárritu, who wrote it as well. It stars Michael Keaton as Regan Thompson, a faded Hollywood actor, best known for playing the superhero Birdman. So this was supposed to mimic what Michael Keaton was like in real life, because he disappeared for a while and then only came back after Birdman.
Yeah, he doesn't think he'd done anything for years or so, nothing of note.
He in this film, he's struggling to mount a Broadway adaptation of a Raymond Carver short story. Birdman won Best Picture, along with Best Director, Best Screenplay, and Best Cinematography.
Yeah, it's all shown as if it's in one continuous shot, which is not the first time that's been done by any means, but it's done to good effect here. And it's interesting watching it, knowing what Michael Keaton has done since, including, I mean, phenomenal films like Spotlight, but he's also, as we just talked about, he's gone back to Batman, he's played the Vulture, in Spider-Man. He even played the Vulture in a post-credits scene of Morbius. Alejandro Iñárritu is on record as, I mean, he does not like superhero films. He's quite contentious of them. I think that comes through in this film. There's some phenomenal performance. I think Ed Norton is really good in this film.
Yep.
Emma Stone did stuff that kind of she had never been seen before.
What a cast, though.
Naomi Watts, Sandra Risborough. Yeah. Phenomenal. I really like this film at the time. I like it still. I think it is saying some interesting things. I think at face or surface level, it is quite derogatory towards superhero films, but then kind of backtracks that a bit and says, well, why shouldn't we like those kind of things? There's the ongoing question of what's really happening in this film.
Because you see Birdman appearing half the time.
And, yeah, Michael Keaton's character, Ringo Thompson, has... Well, he thinks he has superpowers, but then... So you see him kind of moving things with his mind, and then you see Zach Galifianakis coming into the room and seeing him just chugging stuff with his hands. You see him flying across the city, and then you see, cut to a taxi driver saying, you got to pay me. What do you think the... So I remember discussing this with my friend Sophie years ago, and... I think her view was that in a film like this, there's no real concept of what really happening. Personally, I think that's a cop-out. I don't really agree with that. But.
No, I think it's actually... Well, he doesn't have the superpowers. He's just basically doing that in real life.
Yeah.
That's it, really. That's all I think it is.
So what's the end shot? So he jumps out... Well, we see him jump out a window, and then his daughter, played by Emma Stone, comes to the window and then looks up and smiles.
Yeah, that is still a mystery to me. I don't know how I would like to interpret that. I think only in the end, I think... throughout the whole film, I keep thinking that there's some realism behind it. You know, when he was moving things and breaking them, he's literally breaking them in real life, etc. There's nothing to it. I mean, like when he was supposedly flying as Birdman to reach the play, he was in a cab.
Yeah.
The whole time. So I imagine the end was something more like that anyway. So he probably didn't jump off to his death or anything. He's probably,
See, I read it as he did jump to his death, and then but she's kind of now like him, seeing stuff that isn't real.
Huh.
That's how I've always interpreted it.
It's quite a grim version of it.
Yeah, it's pretty grim, yeah.
Yeah. I forgot how much how good this film was, really, until I saw it again. It's a very good film.
Some great dialogue.
Very good dialogue. Yeah. So, yeah, I would recommend it, basically.
Yeah, check it out. Famously, my brother says it's not as good as Horrible Bosses 2. That's it's a claim he stands by. We move on then to our final segment. Before we do that, next time is Actor Factor, and we will be looking at the films of Ralph Fiennes.
All right.
We move on to our final segment, the quiz on the films of Noah Baumbach. Zijan is one quiz behind for the year, and I'm not feeling too confident about this one. No, I'm on a very bad run at the moment.
We'll see. I did the questions this morning. So
okay, I did mine this evening, but very quickly, so I don't really have time to do much research. But we'll find out. I've seen quite a few of these films, so I'll remember some stuff. Zijan, which book by Don DeLillo was adapted by Noah Baumbach?
Don DeLillo? What the heck? Let me see. He does a lot of the writing himself, though. That's the thing. So a lot of this, I think, are original screenplays. I'm just going to go with Marriage Story.
No, it's White Noise.
I didn't know that.
Which you might remember me doing in Tuscan Ultra Z ones.
Question one for me. Which of Noah Baumbach's film is shot in black and white?
Ooh. None of the ones of his I've seen. Let's say it's Frances Ha.
It is Frances Ha.
Oh, I'm doing that based on seeing the poster. In The Squid and the Whale, Walt Berkman describes the book by which author as being Kafkaesque?
By a book by which author?
Walt Berkman is the character played by Jesse Eisenberg, if that's any help you.
No, not really. I'm guessing when you have the whale... It's probably like Moby Dick.
Which author?
Melville.
No. The answer is Kafka.
Nice. Have you seen that film?
Yes. Yeah.
So this will be quite an easy question for you. What does the film title The Squid and the Whale refer to?
It's a two skeletons at the museum.
Yeah, pretty much.
Question three. Who co-wrote Greenberg with Noah Baumbach?
That was his ex-wife, Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Correct.
Question three. What was the original title for Margot at the Wedding, which was changed when they casted Nicole Kidman?
Nicole at the Beach.
That's correct.
Question four. The lead character of Frances Ha is an aspiring what?
Dancer.
Yes.
Question four for you to win, basically.
All the tension.
Marriage Story featured two songs from which Sondheim musical? I've said this to you before where we were discussing it.
Oh, man. I remember having this conversation, but I do not know the answer. And I have seen this film. It's a great film. I can even picture them doing the songs because she's wearing like all black and it's all very arty.
Yep.
But do I know the name of the musical?
Do you know any Sondheim musicals?
Yes. I don't think it's Into the Woods, though. I'm trying to think of any others. It's the one about being in the park with George. Sunday in the park with George? Yeah, that one.
Yeah, that's all right. It's Company. The songs were Being Alive and You Can Drive a Person Crazy.
Fair enough. Speaking of Marriage Story, what is the surname of Nicole and Charlie in that movie?
No, I don't know this.
Oh, no.
Oh. Nicole and Charlie.
I'm going to try and guess what the surname might be based on.
I don't know, many surnames. No, I'm not going to even guess.
No, it's Barbara.
Ugh. My last question for the win, Colin.
Yes.
Which of Noah Baumbach's film was a Netflix film competing at Cannes, prompting the Cannes Film Festival to announce a new rule that a film competing needs to be distributed in French movie theatres from now on?
Ooh. I'm going to say Marriage Story.
No, it's the film before. The Meyerowitz stories.
Oh, of course it is.
So it came out with Okja, and both came out at Cannes, and the Cannes were like, no, we don't like films that come out on streaming services.
Yeah. In fairness, I couldn't get through Meyerowitz stories. I gave up about halfway through. So. Yeah. Well, it's a much needed victory for me, Zijian.
Is it a victory?
Yeah.
We tied it 3. Oh, no.
3-2.
Oh, yeah, it's 3-2. Oh, no, that's very sad. I'm sad now.
I'm sorry to hear that. What is our quiz topic for next time?
George Clooney and Julia Roberts films.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah. They did quite a few together, including all the Ocean's films.
She wasn't in Ocean's 13.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah.
They've done 4 films together, have they?
Eat, Love, Pray.
Was he in Eat, Love, Pray?
I think so. And one very recent as well, which I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, the one about going to Ireland for a wedding.
Yeah, that one.
Can't remember what it was called. It was Ticket to Paradise. Yeah. And Money Monster, I think they were. Anyway, look forward to that. What is our main topic for next time?
We're going back 10 years again, I think.
Nope.
What?
Unless
is that time of the year?
Unless my spreadsheet's out of date. Ugh. It's Indiana Jones 5.
Oh, yes. Okay, well, that's easier then.
And we will definitely see that, and we will see you then.
Bye.